Brooklands Radio believes your health matters.
I'm delighted today to bring you this special all about gynae cancers. We've had lots of interviews on Brooklands Radio and with some just very, very lovely ladies, and I'm humbled to have so many people who are willing to talk to us. We're going to be talking to a couple of people. Lucy Dodds, who is a mum, a teacher and a cancer survivor, and Dr. Kavitha Madhuri, who is a specialty doctor in gynaecology at the Royal Surrey NHS Foundation Trust and at St. Luke's Cancer Care. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, June.
Oh, it's really lovely to have you on here. And I do feel very humbled that so many people are willing to talk about their journeys, because it is such a good thing for other women, other ladies to hear this and to know what some of the symptoms are just in case something like this happened to them. Shall we start first of all with Lucy?
Yep, we can do that.
Lucy, would you like to tell us a little bit about your journey? When did it all start for you?
Well, it all started for me in April 2018 when I got my letter from my GP suggesting it was time for me to go and have my regular smear test, which I and Julie did. And, you know, I didn't think much about it. And I know it always takes time for the results to come back, but I hadn't heard. And of course, you start thinking. And then in May, I did get a letter back. And at the same time as the letter, and a letter from the hospital came asking me to go for a colposcopy. And obviously that did raise concerns with myself, because I had said I had some abnormal cells, which I'd never had before. So I went for that. And whilst I was there, the lovely nurse who I was lucky enough to have, she suggested I had a biopsy whilst I was there. And I'm delighted, looking back, I don't know if delighted is the right word, but I'm glad I did, because that actually helped, you know, miss a stage in waiting, because I was then diagnosed in June, and the diagnosis came back, actually it was the 21st of June, I'll never forget, it was the day before my birthday, and diagnosis came back saying that I did have cancer cells, and I was stage one, grade two, and so that was then, and very luckily the nurse that I eventually spoke to, I think because I spoke to her, we could get the ball rolling. So before I'd even seen one of the consultants, which wasn't Kavitha at this time, she had organised for me to go and have an MRI and PET scan the following Tuesday. And this was on the Thursday. So things actually moved really quickly for me. And then on that Tuesday, I had the PET scan. And then I went to see the consultant on the Wednesday with the results to the PET scan. And I had the MRI on that afternoon. And then I then met back with, it was Dr. Taylor, Mr. Taylor at the time. And on the Friday, he went through, explained that I would have to have what was called a radical hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. I had, that was then put in for middle of July. And of course, I didn't really know what a radical hysterectomy was, but I had explained extremely clearly exactly what the procedure would be, what it would involve. And so on the July the 19th, 2018, I went for radical hysterectomy, where I had my ovaries taken, my fallopian tubes taken, my womb taken out, and also part of my cervix was cut out as well. Right. And then I had to wait for the histology report to come back to see if I would need any further therapy. But thankfully, I was a very lucky lady. It hadn't spread further and no further therapy was needed. So that's it kind of summed up in a little picture. But obviously, it's the process. Although April to July seems long, in actual fact, from the diagnosis to the operation, it was less than 4 weeks.
That's quite amazing, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and I do feel extremely lucky. And I had an amazing team of people. So I had, from the Royal Surrey, there was Mr. Simon Butler, Manuel, and Kavita as well, who became part of the team that I was lucky enough to be treated by.
I think the more I hear about the ladies being treated at the Royal Surrey, there does seem to be a pretty amazing team there.
Oh, I think we were, I mean, actually, you know, every time I think about how I was treated and the people I've got to know, I feel really humbled by the whole process and feel so lucky. And that's made me want to think, well, actually, I'm someone who is lucky enough to come through this and it not to have spread. And I'm still going for regular checkups every 3 to 4 months. But it's really important for me that I now help create more awareness about cervical cancer.
Yeah. And I think that's a brilliant thing to do. Maybe talk a little bit about the fact that you did go for your regular smear test, because so many of us get that dreaded letter through the post and it's something we put off. I mean, it is so important to have it. So tell us, I know you've got really strong views on that. Mm. So tell us more about that.
Well, you know, as a woman, you know, we there's many things that go on in a woman's life. And, you know, you get this letter and, you know, you open it up and I'm sure it's sitting in the kitchen side and you think, right, yes, I'll make that appointment. But, you know, life takes over sometimes, so I can understand why that happens. And sometimes, you know, it's a case of it's embarrassing. You know, you're going along, you're kind of going out there, you're being seen by a nurse that you don't know. And also there's a fear, you know, that you may have as a woman as well. And these are all perfectly good reasons to have, you know, to feel like that. But it's not, educated women need to realize, all women, whether they're educated or not, need to realize the importance that it's either a case of this 5 minute of discomfort, because it's not even painful, it's a slight discomfort. This 5 minute of discomfort and embarrassment is either that, or let's be quite frank about it, you can die.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, 21 women die, you know, every day.
Yeah,
that's scary. From cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, 18,000 women a year are diagnosed. So with these numbers, we've got to get out there and say, look, yes, it is a letter, and yes, it is uncomfortable, and I do feel scared, but that's when we can look at actually women saying, you know, saying to a friend or speaking to your GP, saying, this is how I feel, mm-hmm. and maybe they can offer some form of support for those women.
Well, yes,
Lucy, can I just come in there and say, you know, Jill, thank you very much for having both of us on the show. And as Lucy mentioned, yes, she's been our patient. She has been successfully treated and is cured. And I remember the first time when I met Lucy after all of this, and, you know, I told her she had the all clear, and she turned around to me and said, Kavita, I'm really keen to raise awareness. I don't want, you know, if I can avoid any other women going through this, there's much more we could do. So, you know, we've started on this journey and I'm very excited to be here today to talk about this. What I want to try and do is, Lucy's already told you about cervical screening, the cervical smears and her experience, but I want to try and dispel some myths and misconceptions that we all have, so that we can try and encourage more women to go for their smears. So the first thing I think that probably scares women is that they think that cervical smears will pick up cervical cancer. Now, that's not quite true, because any screening program is actually designed to identify individuals, you know, appear at the outset, you know, externally to be healthy, but for various reasons are at an increased risk of a disease or a condition. So essentially, when we talk about cervical screening, it's to try and get to that point where we don't get to the stage where we're treating a cancer. So really, it's trying to prevent cancer by detecting HPV and treating any precancerous cells in the cervix. So what we know is that if we detect early and treat these precancerous cells, we can prevent nearly 75% of the cancer from developing. So one thing that we all need to bear in mind is that cervical cancer is a preventable disease. Wow. And the two things that we could, you know, think about really is cervical screening and the HPV vaccines. Mm. And both of these really are key if we want to try and essentially prevent the cancer. Mm. Now, you know, most of us, as Lucy has said, you know, just before our 25th birthday, there'll be an invitation to say, come along for your smear. And yes, it's embarrassing. I mean, it's embarrassing for me when I'm on the other side of the couch. Mm-hmm. And I always tell all my patients this, that there is a bit of discomfort. It is embarrassing, but these are highly trained professionals. And when I take cervical smears, we're trained to do this and to try and do it with, you know, the minimal discomfort and embarrassment to the women. So, you know, we all receive this invitation, and up to the age of 49, it's every 3 years. And then beyond that, up to 64, it's every 5 years. So if you think about it, we all take our car annually for an MOT, and, you know, we're only going once every 3 years or once every 5 years, depending on our age or depending on the risk or the need. So really, we ought to invest in ourselves if we, you know, for not just for ourselves, but because of our families, our friends, and because of the role that women play in the society, in their community, in their family. And, you know, it's pivotal that we do this. And I feel very, very strongly about this.
I feel really strongly about the HPV vaccination as well. I mean, and I'm seeing it from a mum who has a 14-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old son. And it's not just the women that need to or the girls that need to have this vaccination, but it's the boys as well, because and it's actually really important that people understand that this vaccination is not a cure, but it's a preventative. And, you know, for women, you know, for there's over 100 types, as I understand, of HPV. Around 40 types of HPV infection can affect the genital area. And Kavita, you can obviously put me right here, but the genital HPV infections are common and highly contagious, and they're spread during sexual intercourse and skin-to-skin contact. And that's not just for females, but that's for males as well. So the message that we need to get across is saying, have the vaccination, but the smear later on, when you reach 25 or at the right age, as a woman you go for your smears, and it can help prevent cervical cancer. And for males, it can help prevent, you know, anal cancer, cancer of the penis, some types of head and neck cancer. So it is for both sexes, and that's what's really important as well. And to make sure that people understand that it is not a cure, but a preventative.
So you're absolutely right, Lucy, because, you know, the HPV virus, it's a very common virus, and it's transmitted from skin-to-skin contact. So it does not even need to be sexual intercourse. I mean, you know, certainly not penetrative intercourse at all. So it's direct skin-to-skin contact, even with just kissing. But what we all need to bear in mind, I mean, there's, you know, there should not be a cause for alarm or panic. Most of us harbor these viruses, okay? But our immune system is very, very capable of clearing the infection without any treatment. So as you said, yes, there are more than 100 subtypes of HPV, but not all of these actually cause any problems for us. So what we've got to remember is that, you know, there are some high-risk HPV types that is what the vaccine is designed to fight against. And there are some low-risk types. So the high-risk type essentially are responsible, you know, in over 99% of cervical cancers, these HPV high-risk viruses have been detected. And, like, you know, it's not just a woman's problem. The anal cancer, the other genital cancers, the penile cancers, and, you know, cancers of the mouth, neck, and throat. HPV is a notorious virus. And you're absolutely right. The government has rolled out a vaccination program since 2008. And initially, they were only vaccinating girls in year 8. You're a school teacher. I'm sure you know, it's very reassuring that if, you know, parents need any further information, if somebody is as well informed or knows a bit more about it like you do, then the, you know, level of reassurance that you can offer, I think, is probably going to be excellent. So the Gardasil vaccine that's currently being offered, it's two doses, And, you know, it's, yes, it's again a minor discomfort, but again, it is a very, very, very good safety mechanism. And what we've forgotten is that we have vaccinated, you know, from birth, and this is just something that's slightly further on in our lives, but it's a very, very good mechanism that currently exists. And I'm delighted that the government, Lucy, you've got a boy, I've got a boy, and I'm delighted that they've rolled this program out to vaccinate boys as well as of the end of last year. So,
parents need to be educated about it as well. That's also really important, because parents aren't sure of all the facts. So that's something maybe that needs to be out there in the schools as well.
Most definitely, because I know when my daughter was due to have it, there were lots of girls in the school who didn't like vaccinations and were saying they weren't going to have it, and their mums had agreed. So, you know, my daughter didn't want to have it, and I said, well, you're having it. And I think it's key that parents are educated better. I mean, I had no idea that it would be useful for boys. And all that information you've just given us, Kavitha, is fascinating, that it can affect all these other types of cancers. I mean, I had no idea about that. So I think we really do need to try and spread the word and get some more information out on HPV itself.
Absolutely. I mean, and, you know, we're talking cancers, which is much further ahead in the journey. But warts? You know, we all have warts in some area or the other of the body, but, you know, genital warts can be quite, you know, it's not pleasant to talk about it. Nobody wants to think about it. But what research, and there's evidence now to suggest that girls who were vaccinated from 2008, there's been a significant drop because of the direct effect of immunization in the number of warts. And then as a result, there's been an indirect effect on the boys, and there's been a significant drop in our country that we've noticed in warts. I mean, that itself is, you know, it's so heartening as a medical professional to hear that. And now that it's, like you said again, you know, if there's a bit more coverage and boys are also covered, it offers that herd immunization. And the hope is really what the NHS cervical screening program is really hopeful is that if we are able to achieve this herd immunity, the 12 cervical screens that a woman should go through during her lifetime, assuming all the smears are normal, can be dropped to just 3. Wow. I mean, I think that would be fantastic. And if I can see that through in my career, I think it's a success.
Yes, no, I think you're right. Maybe there's just one other thing that we need to say here, and that is, moving back to more mature women rather than the teenagers, but lot of women may think they need to wait, and if they get any symptoms that are suspicious, that's the time to have a smear. But Lucy, you didn't have any symptoms, did you?
I didn't have any symptoms that I was aware of at all. I mean, you know, we're told of many things to look for, but as far as I was aware, I was normal. I didn't have anything. Nothing showed. No bleeding. No discomfort. So when people say you get, you know, symptoms, I didn't. But then they do say that cervical cancer is always a silent killer, because until later on, because remember, I was diagnosed early. Later on, maybe that's when the symptoms arise as well, and it's
But even the symptoms, for example, it's, you know, abnormal vaginal bleeding. Now, that's a very vague definition. So, you know, for example, we say heavy periods, bleeding between periods, you know, bleeding after intercourse. These are the things that I ask women to look out for. But, you know, bleeding after the menopause, a smelly vaginal discharge. Yes, it's all suggesting symptoms of, you know, bleeding and discharge. But again, you know, like Lucy said, we all lead very busy lives, and sometimes it's very easy to forget these things. Mm. One thing I would like to say, Jill, is locally in and around Surrey, you know, Grace Charity has been working very hard to try and raise awareness about cervical cancers and the importance of cervical screening. I'm very heartened that there are lots of GP practices that are now running campaigns, particularly because it was Cervical Cancer Prevention Week, you know, they've been doing lots of promotions to basically invite women to have their smears. And like me and you, you know, lots of women are very, very busy in their lives, professionally and personally. And the commonest reason I hear when I see patients is, oh, I don't have the time. Mm. It's fascinating that there are some women. In fact, I've had a couple of women contact Grace Charity, who then reached out to ask me about this, to say that they would help, you know, offer their child minding services if women, for free, if women wanted to go and have their smears.
Yes.
So really, I think we should stop making an excuse. We should go out there. We should go and get our smears done as soon as possible when the time is, you know, it's time for us to do it.
Absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. Ladies, thank you so much for talking to us today. We're going to continue this program in a moment with another couple of amazing ladies who've been here to share their journeys with us. But just to say thank you so much, Lucy, and thank you so much, Dr. Kavitha, for talking to us today about this very, very important topic.
Thank you, Jill. Thank you for having us.
Brooklyn's Radio believes your health matters.